Hello and welcome to episode number 57 of Light the Eye, presented by the U of I Credit Union. I'm Scott Beatty.
And I'm Robert Rosenthal.
57. Interstate 57 goes through Champaign.
It does.
It's a meaningful interstate, a meaningful number to us.
It's a meaningful number because it's the great, do you know this? The great debate from St. Louis people on how to get to Champaign. If you can take 70 to 57 or you can take 55 to Springfield and then go across on 72. And for certain spots in Champaign, like if you're going to the mall, it's faster to go through Springfield. If you're going to the stadium, it's faster to go through Effingham on 70 and 57. Like, trust me, people coming up to Champaign from St. Louis have had this debate 150,000 times. Do you take, are you a 70-57 person or are you a 55-72 person?
A few years ago, Illinois basketball beat Indiana, and the final was 72-57, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Didn't you tweet? Who tweeted that?
I tweeted that?
Yes, that's right.
I was very proud of it.
Yes.
And Tyler Griffey's layup against number one Indiana at the Horn made the final score.
I don't remember.
74-72. Also,
yes.
74, of course, is the other.
The two interstates that get confused every single day.
Mm-hmm.
It is kind of weird. 72 is a weird. Does 72 end in like Quincy?
I think so. I don't know.
So 72 just is Champaign to Quincy? That's it?
Something like that, which is weird because it's not an interstate. It would be an intrastate.
74 is like Quad Cities to what? Cincinnati or whatever?
Yeah,
is that it?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm always looking for these things. Mm-hmm. You know, you're always looking for basketball team beats opponent 8x to
5x.
You know, because 11 or 12 spread over across a multiples of 10 is bigger than 12 over one multiple of 10.
One of the best moments for me. That's
we terrible. Really are keeping the audience here.
One of the best moments for me. What was the Iowa score? 71-59 was the final score. So it's a back-and-forth game. Nobody has more than a two-point... It doesn't have more than a two-point lead until Tommy made that second shot with, like, 6 minutes to go, 5 minutes to go, something like that. But then it ended up a 7X, 5X score. And I remember the moment on the court after the game. Just, I'm always following that score. And that moment after the game of, like, oh, my gosh. And on top of all of this, the final score will not at all reflect what the game was like. People will see 71-59 and be like, oh. Illinois blew them out and went to the Final Four. No, it was a very close game. It's just nobody's going to remember that.
Yeah, because nobody can subtract those two numbers.
No, no one ever does. Everybody's just like, oh, they beat them by 20.
But also, football, when they beat Michigan 2 years ago.
2-1-7.
Yep, 21-7. The 2-1-7 area code.
Yep. The entire universe is aligned around Illini Athletics right now.
This episode, we are going to get into some football. And speaking of numbers, we're going to talk a little bit of numbers. There's a guy that gets into them, Phil Steele, author of Phil Steele's College Football Preview. It is basically the best when it comes to all the preview magazines that you can find out there. And I have used it for years just to get primers on teams. And it's full of actually really good information. And more facts and figures that you can use to try to process how a game or games or a schedule or a season might play out. So we're going to do that. But you're also secretly a little bit of a numbers guy, even though you put on this whole facade of feelings.
Tiny, tiny little bit of...
Yeah.
I call them nerd stats.
Yeah. But most importantly, you're already sort of answering the question, but this is our first chance to talk since the jump. At the beginning of the week. You're smiling, so you apparently are just fine, but there's still a lot we have. This is kind of our post-game show.
Yes, you're right.
Of the jump.
You're right. This is very like, Coach, what do you think went wrong out there? What would you do differently next time? You know, I don't know if I like the question very much.
Yeah, you know what, Robert?
My team competed.
You know, Robert, he doesn't make adjustments in his long jumps.
I did make an adjustment. We'll get to that. We'll get to that.
Producer Kendall Crawford is here. So, some jumping post-mortem. some predictive measures about Illinois football, and then we're going to get ourselves ready to go to media days next week for Big Ten football, and specifically Illinois Day on Tuesday up in Chicago. But first, we light the eye.
First, we need to light the eye.
All right, Kendall Crawford is our producer, engineer with us today. Hello, Kendall.
How's it going, everybody?
Good.
Back at it again.
Here we are, back in studio. First off, this is your last episode with us, at least for a while, because you're off to an exciting adventure before the fall semester starts.
Yeah, I'm very sad to say goodbye to you guys because this has been a great experience and it's a lot of fun to be a part of this. So, but I know I'm going to do great things in Cincy and hopefully I can come back and be a part of even more episodes later on. So,
yep. I don't know if any will be as taxing on you as making you film me jump into sand.
No, I don't know, man. That was a very unique experience, but I mean, a blessing. To be sure, honestly.
It had to be like, you know, what decisions have I made in my life that I'm standing here pointing a camera at some man trying to jump over a 1 foot blue tarp and he can't clear it?
I'm just waiting for your first resume. Will it be on the resume or
yes.
not?
Like, yes. You know,
don't put light the eye on this.
Mm-hmm.
No, if they ask for an example video or like, I'm totally doing the jump episode. I'm gonna be like, I was right here. I was in this historic moment watching Robert, you know, almost clear 10 feet, but just barely missing it.
Almost?
Let's get into it.
Almost?
Let's get into it.
Okay, if you caught the second jump, right? I mean, you gotta mm-hmm. give him some slack. He tried his hardest out there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Recapping, if you missed our last episode, Robert finally executed a jump. And boy, did you execute it. But
Coach, how do you feel about the execution of your team out there? I'm for it.
We had a bet on whether Robert would be able to clear 10 feet without any training, without any preparation other than, okay, let's start with the hill. We yes. went to Colbert Park in Savoy, mm-hmm. and you decided the warm-up mm-hmm. would just be, let's run up a hill.
Mm-hmm. What was the thinking there?
What went into that decision there?
Not a joke. Several people had reached out to me saying, all right, here's the thing. You know, you keep saying you're worried you'll pull a hamstring. The worry here is Achilles. When you're jumping like that and you're putting stress on the back of your foot. So, again, do I talk to, you know, there's somebody who writes for the website who's a physical therapist, and I did not consult Tyler. I was just like, okay, well, how do I make sure my Achilles is toasty warm in my mind? I was like, okay, I'll just run up a hill and back down a couple times, and then I'm all loose and ready to go. That was literally my thinking.
Yeah. I don't know that, you know, the track athletes here in the Armory go, let's go find a hill before the meet. Mm-hmm. But, hey.
Hey, look. Look, it got us there. We're not injured.
That's right. Robert, okay, and then the other thing that happened was we found a sand pit at Colbert Park where you can play sand volleyball, but there's a bit of a tarp fence. It's about a foot high that keeps the sand in, and so you have to clear that mm-hmm. Before you hit the sand. And your first attempt, you didn't.
I did not, and I face planted.
Yes. But we allowed you to go again.
Yes, but here's the thing. Like, I heard from so many people, they would just send me basically the same text, which is the moment you were saying draw the line right here, I'll have no problem getting over that blue tarp. I was thinking, like, dude, you're like a foot away from it. You have to jump up.
It's 2 feet.
Have your feet clear this thing to get over it. So a lot of people were like, yeah, you have set yourself up for failure here. And if we notice, I did do that still frame when putting out the episode of my toe catching on the thing. If you look at that one, it was a foot fault.
Mm-hmm.
My toes were like 3 inches over the line. So had I cleared the blue tarp and somehow gotten to 10 feet, the flag would have been up.
However, I think in the spirit of what you claimed here so many months ago, which was, I think I could go jump 10 feet right now.
Mm-hmm.
Were you in that moment going, yeah, and I wouldn't foot fault? Or was it just wherever I took off from, I would land 10 feet later?
That was it. That was it. I made that example of the parking lot, like 9-foot stripes in a parking lot. Go to a grocery store, those painted lines are 9 feet apart. And I was just looking at them. Like, if I had a full head of steam and I didn't worry about how I landed, even if I crumpled into a ball when I landed, I think I could jump from one of these lines to the other. And then, therefore, if that's the case, then I could do this, you know.
Or belly flopped.
Into sand. Yes. So that was my thinking. Do you want to know what was the hardest, like the thing that like didn't operate the way I thought it would? Was the jump. Like when,
oh, the jump part was the hardest part?
That is pretty funny. When you're running forward, you know, like, if I feel like I could do a standing broad jump and get like 7 feet or something like that. Oh God, here's a new challenge.
Geez.
No, but I'm saying is when you're running to transition to put the energy on that foot and go up, when your momentum is going that way, that was the hardest. Like both times I did it, my body was like, oh, I don't feel like I'm jumping at all. I'm just like lifting my feet up at this point. So that was the weirdest thing. I'm sure there's some kind of technique that you're supposed to like get low when you're about to launch and really focus on your plant foot and pushing up when you're doing it. But yes.
Yeah, they may have a technique to it.
Yeah, you think there's some technique and some idiot can't just go jump 10 feet right now, as I said. But yes, that was the surprising part of it all.
Well, the good part of it all is somebody is benefiting from the whole thing.
Yes.
Thanks to your
idiocy.
Sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
CrisisNursery.net, and some people have reached out and posted to say that they would like to give. And thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. And Crisis Nursery hopefully is suddenly wondering why $77 is showing up in random segments. You don't mm-hmm. have, nobody, we're not,
yes.
give however you would be feel led to give there, CrisisNursery.net. But you are providing $77 to Crisis Nursery.
Yes, I've already made my donation.
Yeah. But some of the comments from our YouTubers, Mark says, normally I just listen on Spotify, but I had to watch. Good on you, Robert.
Mm-hmm.
Marcus wants to know if you've sent the recruiting highlight video to Coach Bielma. He's always looking for a good nose tackle. And you did somehow tackle your nose.
That's a good point. I like that. That was a good joke. We should have used that in some way. I want to talk about a nose tackle. God, the sand that was still in my hair later that day.
Chris says, I watched, I am watching from the Galapagos Islands, and this is definitely one of the highlights of my trip.
I mean, if I'm getting the trip to Galapagos, I'm going to be sitting there with my phone in my hand watching some idiot jump. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah. It was Chris, it's the highlight of your trip, and the trip was a highlight. Hey! Ba-doom! Triple Illini has concerns about your car, because your car made an appearance in the show. We had some footage from inside the car.
I didn't see this comment.
Maintenance required.
Oh. That pops up all the time.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's a bad sensor.
He said the car is doing, I assume it's a he. He says the car is doing great. It was just trying to stage an intervention.
Maintenance required. That's pretty good. Kudos to whoever said that.
Scott says, not sure if the podcast videos are eligible for the $100,000 prize or $10,000 prize, but the jump beats most things I've seen on America's Funniest Home Videos.
Excellent. Excellent. I'm glad people. Yes, I heard from many people that told me, I brought my kids over to watch it. And
yep.
Yeah, look, if I can entertain you people as a big dumb animal, I'm going to do it.
Kevin says, love the episode, Robert. That took guts coming from, this is his words, coming from a slightly overweight 60-year-old man. I'm glad it wasn't me having to jump 10 feet in front of the internet.
Yes.
If there is an easy way to donate to either of your charities, I would gladly contribute to each of your charities. So thank you.
I've heard from a lot of people, like on Slack, I heard from six or seven people that already gave in $77. So thanks to everyone. I'm glad we could turn this into something besides my shame.
Laura says, best episode yet, guys. well, actually, that's from Bruce in Houston. He says, best episode yet. Okay, when we first sat down to think about this, however many months ago, we didn't think about it. I did not think about these antics. And you're here to tell me that just you being ridiculous is what's going to make quality content.
I mean, I'm here for it. Let's get some more challenges out there. Look, if we can raise some money, I'm in. Here's the worst part of the whole thing for me. Several people, both in texts, on Slack, other places, including one person who seemed to know long jumping, said, hey, just so you know, you can get 10 feet. They're like, I watched it. When you said you were going to slow down, I was thinking, oh, that's going to blow it. Speed is everything. You can't go half speed.
Yeah, you kept repeating speed, precision, not speed.
Yes, because okay, so when you're running down the hill and you're, you know, it's on grass and it's not like perfectly, it's not some fairway here that's perfectly graded out. So the first run down the hill, I was like, ooh, this is a little out of control. So I'm looking at that wooden bench to the left and I'm looking at the wall to the right. And I was like, maybe we didn't think about this when choosing this exact spot. So that's why the second time, especially after falling, I'm like, okay, I'm not going to try and tear down the hill. I'm just going to stay under control and make a jump. So the last thing people need to tell me in this moment is, hey, look, if you do train, I bet you can get 10 feet. You know, it's not that far off. And if you get some good, and if you're running down a flat surface and you have spikes and everything else, you could probably do it. I'm not going to, but that's the last thing I need in my head is like, you know, with a little better conditions, let's keep this thing going. Let's keep this claim going out there.
I just feel like I need to abdicate myself or not abdicate. I need to get immunity here.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for saying we chose, because I gave you several options. Look,
you did.
It was not a traditional, conditions were not pristine.
Mm-hmm.
The park is great, but not necessarily ideal for long jumping.
I did hear from somebody who said, I can get you access to an actual long jump pit. I don't need that either. I'm not going to try this again. Look, we emerged from this unscathed. There are no torn anything. I didn't break a toe. I didn't do anything else. So the fact that we accomplished this with no injury and the money was raised and I made a fool of myself and my claim was debunked, we're good with that. I can't have these things in my head because I'll just wake up at 3 a.m. and be like, you know, if we did, I mean, like, you know, those tracks are kind of springy. So just from that spring, and then I wouldn't have to worry about running into a wooden bench. I could get more speed going. And if I'm running on a flat surface, I bet I could. I don't need that because I'd talk myself into it. I'd absolutely talk myself into it.
Your wife just called and she said, no. All right, and before we go, Chad wrote in the comments, and Crawford is wearing an awesome shirt. His folks did good.
That's right.
That would be Kendall Crawford.
The only 22-year-old on it. Wait, 21? How old are you?
Oh, I'm 21.
21-year-old wearing a Rush shirt.
Yeah, he must be talking about the Rush shirt, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good
yes.
band. I know all you people. You better listen to them. They're good.
That's right. Tell everybody in your generation that you're into a band from the 70s. I love it.
I totally sound so cool right now. Like all the
57-year-old dudes listening to this are like, man, if I could go back to my Trans Am in 81 and my Rush cassette tape. Do you know what an 8-track is? You ever heard of an 8-track? Do you know what, if I say the words 8-track, do you know what that is?
Like an 8-track tape?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Look at him.
Yeah, oh yeah, I love music.
Okay, good. We had an 8-track in the old family van in like 1978. Then we switched over to cassettes.
I just want to put a button on this.
Yep.
Another message that came to us said, you know, again, went through this, was not a legitimate long jump, you know, clearing the sidewalk, the blue plastic thing, wooden bench. But this was not really fair to you. You were set up to fail with that setup. You chose this. That's all I want everyone to know. You chose this.
Yes. It was it was my doing. And honestly, my first thought was to do it at the volleyball courts over right just north of lot 31, right by the tailgating lots. But that one has like a 18-inch drop into the sand from where you would be running up to it. So just think if I jumped off of that and made it 10 feet and then some physics major says, actually, that 18-inch drop from where you leapt to where the surface of the sand was gained you an extra 14 inches, so you technically didn't make it. So, you know, and even if I would have made this one, I'm running down a hill to get more speed. Is that technically, you know, there's a lot of...
Next time we get Petros Kipriano in here, we'll have to ask him about what is goes into the perfect launch angle and velocity for a long jump.
I can button it all up this way. It's not easy when you're 53 and my weight to jump. Like, when's the last time I sprinted? When's the last time I tried to jump anything besides, like, I was thinking, like, oh, there's a creek on a golf course a few years ago that I had to, my ball's on the other side, so I had to jump over the creek, grab the ball, jump back. Like, that, you just don't do that. And so this was this big, even when we were warming up, I had this big, like, my body does not function like it did 5 years ago, even.
Yeah.
There is a big, like, man, 53 is 53.
Yeah, well, you
this
know.
This is not easy.
Maybe next time you say, I can just do that, now you know.
Next time I open my big mouth, I'll know that I'm an idiot.
Light the Eye is brought to you in part by Logic Coworking. It's the ideal workspace in a bright, welcoming environment. You can enjoy 24/7 access as a member to best-in-class amenities and focus in a workspace designed for inspiration, connection, and support. But there's also day passes if you want to give them a try with no strings attached, or if you know just for a day or two that you need a getaway to focus in a distraction-free environment. It's a full day of productivity for the price of lunch. There's day passes available Monday through Friday. If you know you're going to need a more permanent location, you can book an office at various levels inside Logic for some isolated working space. And there's also conference space and event rooms, plus free printing, fast internet, kitchen, and even showers and lockers. Logic Coworking at the corner of Neal and St. Mary's in Champaign. All right. We're going to turn the page into August here at the end of next week, and that's football month. And, of course, Tuesday, Chicago Media Day. So it's the annual summer mile marker of football season is on the horizon. As today, I think, is around, what, 40, you know, a little more than 40 days until kickoff.
Crazy, right?
Which is interesting because, you see, 40 days, and this is in July, and kickoff is in September, so it's 2 months away. But it's still, you know, you get where I'm going there, but it's
JXSX.
Yeah. So it's 2 months from now. 40 days. It's just 2 months. Yep. It's a long time away.
It
anyway,
is.
I digress. So Phil Steele, we're going to talk with him. He's our guest, and he does a lot of predictive things based on historical data and experience of the roster and how the players grade out and the schedule and da-da-da-da-da. And gives you an overlook at each team's season. But he really goes in depth in the depth charts and all that stuff. So we're looking forward to talking to him. So folks who followed you for a long time kind of probably know how you work. I've known you for quite a while. I don't know how you work.
No one knows.
But a lot of times football makes you feel something. And famously, right before the start of the season, you will submit your predictions, right?
Yep. Yeah, won't do it till the night before.
Yeah.
But
and that's fine. I respect
need all
that.
The information I can get.
Yeah. So how do you look at the numbers and the whole thing versus you know, again, I just keep saying, well, Illinois loses a lot of experience.
Mm-hmm.
They're bringing in a really good quarterback, but he'll be new. They've got new lines. They've got a new defensive scheme. So that just kind of adds up to, well, what does that feel like? It feels like the floor of this team is the highest it's been because of the program, where the program is at. Like, just the the aggregate talent on any given year under Brett Bielema is in a really good place.
Yes.
But to replicate where you have been the last couple of years, that seems like a tall task, given all the factors that are mixed in for just this year. I'm not talking about next year. I'm talking about this year.
Yep. Yeah, it's going to be I was trying to come up with this yesterday, actually. The biggest, if you just look at it too deep and you just highlight the new players, like no experience either in the program or they're a freshman or they just haven't played before. If you just highlight the new players in the two deep, it's probably the most in 10 years. You know, if you just had a two deep chart, 44 names on there, and you just color coded the new guys kind of thing. Hey, this guy wasn't with the program last year. He was at Georgia State. This guy is a freshman. This guy didn't play at all, but you know, he redshirted, but he's probably going to, you know, Braden Trimble is going to play at wide receiver, that type of thing. He's on the depth chart. If you just had new players, it's probably the most in 10 plus years. My guess, I haven't run the numbers, would be the 2017 team when Lovie famously started. 15 different true freshmen started at least one game. They completely overhauled everything that year. So that was probably the last time it was this much of an overhaul. It's not that, obviously.
It's not the same
reason. It's not going to be the same thing. But if you just look at, here's the 44 main players on the team, this is probably the most newcomers in a decade kind of thing. So it's just going to be that kind of team. With the portal, you can maintain these things a lot better than you could in the past. You couldn't go out and just add a Caden Hauser as the quarterback.
Yeah, there was
in the past.
There was the certain programs in the old days where this is our national championship year, and then we're going to take a dip down to in a marquee bowl year.
Yes.
But we're always going to be kind of riding there at the top because of whatever advantages they created or had help with.
Yes.
But then there were the teams like Illinois. Okay, this is Kirk Kittner's last year. This is a bunch of veterans, and we're winning the Big Ten championship, and we're going to the Sugar Bowl. But then everybody's, you know, there's just a whole new roster turnover, and okay, well, maybe next year is going to be a dip. But then Illinois can build itself back up as those sophomores and freshmen. Well, now you have the Kurt Cignettis of the world that can say, okay, I'm coming in and I'm bringing 10 guys from my really good James Madison program. And forget this last year, 2 years ago, Indiana was really good.
Mm-hmm.
So just go, but I'm just not sure you could have, if this was an NFL team and you had this much turnover, I don't know that you could sit there and go, yeah, this year is going to be, maybe.
Yeah.
But it's like, oh, what about the year after this?
Yeah. It's.
That
makes sense. It's going to be a, let's use college basketball. Just to pivot, look at it from a different angle. In college basketball, we are all excited about next season because of the number of players returning. Now, you don't have Wagler. You don't have Boswell. You don't have Ben. You're going to have issues with, you know, replacing this and that. But there is still, in any sport, wow, they have a lot coming back. And once those players were playing together, that's good. There's also ways to add players and get good. Look at the 2024 season for Illini basketball, okay? 2023 and 2024 is maybe the best example of this. 2023, if we just boil it down to one thing, is didn't have the right pieces around Terrence Shannon Jr. Just didn't work with Matthew Meyer, whatever, 9 seed, lost to Arkansas first round. The next year, again, brand new players plug him in, and it worked. You went and found Justin Harmon and Quincy Guerrier, and most importantly, Marcus Damask, and that fit around Shannon, and you go to the Elite Eight. So, yes, you can just immediately rebuild teams now in both sports if you hit on all those guys. And Indiana's famously hit on a bunch of guys. The issue with college football is when you lose a large number of linemen, even if you replace them pretty well, it's usually a struggle before those players gel playing next to each other. You know, when you start talking units in college football, it's really hard to have a defense or an offensive line that's just like, oh, five new starters, but they were all great and it was good. I don't care if you're Georgia, Alabama, whatever. When you have a bunch of new guys all trying to gel, well, the first six games where they play together is like, oh, he didn't know what he was doing and this type of that thing. So the principles still exist. It's a lot easier to rebuild, but the principles still exist. As long as losing four or five starting offensive linemen, it's going to be an adjustment for the new line at the start of the season for them to just come together and gel. Could be a better line. Could be more talented players. Who knows? But there's usually a period where they have to adapt to playing with each other.
So what are the numbers you're looking at?
I use SP Plus a lot. That's Bill Connolly on ESPN. Because it's real simple. There's rankings to it, but the number he comes up with teams is a very simple, like, this team is expected to be 2.3 points per game better than the average team. So here's what the offense will do. Here's what the defense will do. Here's what the special teams will do. That comes out for Texas this fall to be 23.7. Like, Texas, if they played the average college football team, the 65th best team, would likely beat them on a neutral field by 23 points. You go down to the other end and Purdue is minus 2.9. If they even play just the average team, they're going to be 3 points worse. That's the expectation there. I have followed this for years because it's the best way to talk about that ceiling floor thing. If we go in history, let me pull this up real quick so I can pull some of these up. Like, Lovey's first three teams were minus 6.7, followed by minus 7.4, followed by minus 7.9. And those are the results. Those aren't the projections. Those are the after the season. That's how bad those teams. If people think back to bad Illinois teams, when Ron Turner took over, people remember there was an 18-game losing streak at the time, went 0-11 in his first season. The roster was decimated. Had more quarterbacks than defensive linemen, like all the stuff that we talked about at the time. That team was minus 18.1. They were 18 points worse than an average college football team. We're talking like a decent MAC team kind of level of team, and that's how much they were. And the top teams are what you would remember, the 2001, 07, even, you know, he has numbers going back to, you know, 89 was a team that was 20.4.
What was the Citrus Bowl team?
2 years
ago.
2 years ago, the Citrus Bowl team was a 9.6, and then last season was a 12.9. And I wrote about this like five times after the season. Like, people won't remember that statistically last year's team was better. They just didn't have as good of a record. The things that drove that number down in 2024.
Small wins or small margins.
Yes. You beat Purdue in overtime. And so when these numbers are looking at that and it says like, wait, you're supposed to beat this team by 33 and you went to overtime and won because they failed on a 2-point conversion.
They didn't do the whole Ryan Walters factor in there.
But. Yes. So that is a, hey, play the season over. And instead of a 10-3 team, that might be an 8-win team or maybe even a 7-win team. Some things went right, and let's acknowledge it. Illinois had a quarterback the last two seasons that performed at the end of games almost to perfection, and that's the difference. You know, people who follow these numbers in the NFL will say, you can follow these numbers and experience matters and this and that, and the one thing that can change all this and throw all of it out is to have a great quarterback. Patrick Mahomes can make it look, you know, all the little problems you have statistically can make it all go away because he can just fix it in the last 2 minutes kind of thing. So, you know, that's part of that. But we're talking ceilings and floors here. So I just want to point this out, that the average season for Illinois has always been right at negative or slightly above. And so for these last 2 years to be a 9.6 and a 12.9 for Illinois football is exceptional. And that those aren't even as high as the 15.9 they were in the 2022 season. Like, that 2022 team, even though it only won 8 games compared to 9 and 10 the last 2 years, was statistically better, and we remember that. That defense was outstanding. They almost beat playoff team Michigan if the ref would have thrown a flag on fourth down. Not going to say that out loud. I just did. But, you know,
into a microphone that's recording.
That's right. But statistically, that was the best of these last 4 teams, was 2022, just on this. Now, games aren't won on paper, right? Like, games are won on the field, and USC can have a really high number here and then go 8-5. You know, a couple of years ago, Miller Moss, their quarterback, threw interceptions on like 3 late drives, and they lost all 3 games. You know, this can, you can have a great everything and do this and not have a closer, and suddenly your 10-win season is a 7-win season. So that's how these things go. All of that to set up that this year projects, he has Illinois 33rd in the projection as a 9.3. So that's just his projections of, here's the returning starters, here's what you've added from the portal, here's the strength of the current program, here's this how they've done statistically. This is just a laptop looking at a team. It's not a, you know, here's his opinion. It's just what his laptop is spitting out. So he has Illinois as the number 33 team going into this season. And I think that's pretty fair. And I'd also like to note that 9.3 would be like the third best season in the last 15 years or something like that. Like, this is where I go to say that the floor is high. And if it's a 7-5 season that puts up a 9.3 in something like this, I will have never felt better about where Illinois football sits. Because we're talking a program that statistically is putting up, you know, even the 2014 season was a bowl season. It was a 0.4. That's a team that really was just an average college football season. You know, the 2019 team was a 0.6. Yes, they went to a bowl, but they weren't doing anything substantial. If this is a down year and puts up what's projected to be a 9.3, then the floor has really, really, really gone up for this program.
I just thought of an episode title for this.
Hit me.
Okay, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
You can tell me no.
Mm-hmm.
Kendall, you can tell me no.
Mm-hmm.
Title of this episode?
Mm-hmm.
Math and Aftermath.
I like it.
We're talking numbers about
and,
football?
And the aftermath? The jump aftermath.
I'd explain it. Right?
Well done. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Explain it. Always make it better. Yes, I like it. I'm in.
Yeah,
that's and people already know this because they are 20 minutes in or whatever we are, and they are actually listening to what says on their screen, math and aftermath.
Yeah. We didn't turn them off.
That's right.
All right. I'm going to throw some numbers at you.
Mm-hmm.
Ready?
Hit me.
I'm going to give you 3 numbers. You tell me what they are. 9, 8, 10. Any idea what that is? 9, 8, 10.
I'm going to say 8 returning starters.
Nope.
10 wins 2 years ago. No. Hit me. What is it?
Iowa football wins the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
9 last year.
Mm-hmm.
8 the year before.
Mm-hmm.
10 in 2023.
Mm-hmm.
If you got to 8 wins this year, which the predictive measure, and we're going to talk to Phil Steele too. If you get to 8 wins, you just did what Iowa did in the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to keep going. 9, 8, 10.
Mm-hmm.
8, 10, 6. That was the COVID year. 6 of 8 games.
Mm-hmm.
So that translates to 9-ish. Yeah, 9 wins.
Mm-hmm.
9, 10 wins in a regular season. 10 in 2019. 9, 8, 8, 12 back in 2015.
Are we still looking at Iowa?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
7, 8. You gotta go back to 2012. The last time Iowa did not have a winning season, they went 4-8. You get where I'm going with this? If Illinois does 7 or 8 wins this year, they're kind of becoming Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
And not in the bad way of becoming Iowa, you know, because
mm-hmm.
not in the hated Iowa. I mean, in yes. the model sustainable mm-hmm. consistency. Yes. The thing that was the whole goal from the beginning that thought that, like, this is not what Illinois football does. Sustainable yep. success.
I mean, I should have put that together because I tweeted this just a couple weeks ago. Michigan football the last 2 years, 17 wins. Iowa football the last 2 years, 17 wins. Illinois football the last 2 years, 19 wins. Like, this is as good as it gets.
Like, I'll never forget the day I was at Iowa for a baseball series, and a staffer there, we were near the football stadium and said, oh, you know, another 8-win season. And I thought mm-hmm. they would build a statue.
Yep.
If he would average 8 wins.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what Minnesota has done, working from last year and then backwards before that. 8-8-6,
mm-hmm.
9-9.
The 6 is gets an asterisk. They went 5-7 and got a bowl bid because there weren't enough bowl teams. Sorry, just needed to throw that out there.
Quick lane bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Before COVID, 11-7. You know, you're in the league now with Minnesota and Iowa.
Oh, we're better than Minnesota.
Minnesota. I mean, yeah.
We're
this
ahead
year.
Of Minnesota's stand. Yeah. Statistically. Yeah, yeah.
But like I'm just talking about historically. You're mm-hmm, now mm-hmm. no longer. If you, one more, I just say 3 years of this, you're out of the, oh, that's a bottom tier team. And nobody's suggesting Illinois is, but,
mm-hmm.
or expecting them to be. But yep.
I mean, I just want to point out that last year, going back to my SP Plus, just the number, last year Illinois was a 12.9, Minnesota was a 1.5. Those are not two identical, like 8-4 teams.
No.
One was significantly better and played a harder schedule and beat USC and everything else. So,
and who yes. was the other one? I'm just kidding.
But yes, statistics really bear this out that, you know, that's not even looking at wins and losses. That's just looking at how well do you play the game of football. Conley has built 5 factors that he calls them of, here are the things that win teams games, and if they can do them consistently, these are the strongest programs. So that's what his laptop is spitting out, and it is saying even with only 8 returning starters, Illinois projects as the 33rd best college football team, and I think that is fantastic.
We'll get the perspective of another guy that puts together a lot of factors and predictive measures. Phil Steele joins us next. It is the book the experts cannot do without. Phil Steele's College Football Preview. If for more than 3 decades, it has been a go-to source to get your head around the upcoming football season. I've got my copy right here that I went and got at Barnes & Noble, because that's where you can find it, or you can order it online. But more importantly, we are pleased to talk to Phil Steele, author of Phil Steele's College Football 26. Phil, it is great to connect with you again, and this is always a Herculean task when you put this thing together. So thank you for congratulations, and thank you for spending some time.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, it takes 7 months to put that magazine together, and it's the biggest ever now this year, 376 pages. And we give you the same amount of coverage on Georgia State or Ohio U that we do on Alabama or Ohio State, 2 full pages. It's like getting 138 media guides rolled into one.
I know so many people who only can't go to their beach vacation in the summer without it. Like, my wife is going to read the novel she bought. I'm sitting in my beach chair, and I'm reading every page of this thing. It is the obsessive guide. It is the Bible for college football fans.
Don't get too much suntan lotion on that, Robert.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right.
Well, and here's the difference between, you know, Robert's going to read the Illinois section, and because that's all, you know, but there's – don't tell Robert this. There are people that care about
other
teams.
Other college football teams.
Yeah, so, but obviously, right. we look at this through an Illinois lens. And so that's as good a place to start as any, because you know, we've already had this chat on the show today just about numbers and setting expectations. And you know, the bottom line is in your preview for Illinois, you say should be able to make a bowl. Please explain to the fans why your predictive measures are not to be trusted, and that, in fact, Illinois will win 9 and 10 games again.
There you go. Well, I think expectations for Illinois are definitely a lot lower this year than they were heading into last year. I think heading into last year, they were a very experienced team. In fact, they were number 3 on my experience chart. They had the veteran quarterback coming back in Luke Altmaier and a team loaded with talent. I thought a lot of the sort of a trendy pick to make the playoff possibly, you know, from one of the bottom ones in the Big Ten. This year they're flying more under the radar. And I'm a big Brett Bielema fan. I mean, Brett Bielema has done a phenomenal job getting this team to where they are. The 19 wins the last 2 years are the most ever for a 2-year stretch in Illinois history, and he's doing a really good job building the team. While they lose Altmaier, I do like Caden Hauser coming in from Eastern Carolina. He's a guy that last year had a solid year. He had 66%, threw for over 3,000 yards. He can also move. He can run, and so he's an intelligent QB as well. So that was a big pickup there. I love the run game. You know, Valentine, Lowry, and then adding in a couple of true freshmen like they did. They bring in two of the what I call are a VHT freshman and Javier Barnett. I like the talent they have there. Moving Fegan to tight end, I think, is a big plus. And in fact, Coach Bielema told me it's the best tight end room that he's had since he's been here, and it goes 5 deep. And there's good talent throughout. My biggest question mark, if I looked at Illinois, would probably be the experience level of the offense and defensive lines. Now, Bielema is known for putting together a solid offensive line, and he's got guys that have played. It's just they lose 4 starters from last year's exceptional group, and defensive line as well. They lose the majority of that. But, you know, Bielema will get this team playing together well. I think when you look at the schedule, I can definitely see Illinois opening up 5-1 this year, 1 loss at Ohio State. And when you look at the end part of the schedule, it gets a little bit tougher. Oregon at home I think will be tough, but the Maryland game, Nebraska, UCLA, Iowa, there's a lot of winnable games down the stretch. So as long as Illinois is playing its best ball down the stretch, then they could perhaps get to that 9-10 level you're talking about.
Well, you're a numbers guy, and obviously the conversation you have with the head coach and everything else goes into this, but also experience plays a lot. So we talk about predictive metrics, maybe would be a better word than analytics, but how do you rate experience playing college football on a roster versus experience playing with that team on a roster? Are they any different?
They are different. In fact, in the magazine, I've got 2 different lists there. I've got the overall experience chart, which is the guys returning from last year, and then the amount of portal starts that were added, which were a bunch. They bring in 84 portal starts. But the homegrown chart, which I have, talks about teams that have freshmen that turn into sophomores, juniors, more of a team atmosphere. And the thing I found last year was those teams that were heavy on the homegrown chart, teams like Alabama, Georgia, that the majority of their team is based on the players they recruited. They used the transfer portal to add to it. They had a higher level of success than those teams that bring in 40, 50 new players on a yearly basis. Now, Bielema hasn't been bringing in that many players on a yearly basis, but they do bring in 52 newcomers this year, which is a pretty large number to get them all acclimated by the time the season rolls around. But you go back to the experience level, I like the fact he brought in 84 starts from last year. And really, when you're looking at transfer players coming in, that is the key factor. I would much rather take a G6 or a FCS player that has tons of experience than the 5-star guy that hasn't played. I think that's a big plus. So he did a good job, I feel, in the portal, bringing in experience.
How difficult has it been to tweak that every year with the portal? Because I know you used to have, you used to just have a straight up letterman chart. Like, here's the letter winners that are returning and that type of thing. And now it's, okay, these aren't freshmen coming in or not even JUCOs. You got a 4-year starter at Georgia Southern who can now come in and play corner or whatever. How difficult has it been in all the charts you put together to kind of dial that in as to what matters in rebuilding a team?
Yeah, and you know, the funny thing is, looking at it throughout the years, I used to have my the plus-minus chart, which is every year I look at a position, I grade it anywhere from -5 to +5, you know, as far as offensive line. Do you lose all five starters? You don't have any experience coming in. That's minus five. Hey, last year they were really bad on the offensive line, but everybody's back, and they added in some players, and they had three guys injured last year. That would be a plus five on the offensive line. So anywhere in between there. Generally, fives are rare. But anyway, I used to add them all up and then multiply it times 0.6. This year, I'm multiplying it times 0.75 because there has been bigger adjustments in teams. You see teams make bigger rises and falls than they have in the past, and that's been due to the transfer portal. So, yeah, it has made it more difficult. And sometimes the transfers coming in, you know, I've gone through teams with the coaches prior to the season, and then you look at after the season's over, it's like, well, they brought in 20 transfers, but only four of them earned starting jobs. 16 of them didn't see a lot of time. So it all depends who sticks, who doesn't, and has made it tougher. But I'll tell you what didn't make it tougher this year was the fact there wasn't a second spring portal window. I didn't have to rewrite 130 teams all in the month of May and try to get this thing out to the press in June. But the one thing I took from all the coaches is when I told them that, you know, they would say, hey, Phil, how you doing? I'm like, oh, my God, so much better. No second portal, blah, blah. And they would say, hey, we were more of a team this spring because the team we took into the spring, we knew we were coming out of the spring. So we could coach the players harder. We could list somebody third deep, knew he wasn't going to transfer away. And I feel this year, Phil, we're much more of a team than we have been the last 3 years. And I think it's going to result in a better level of college football and help get these transfer players integrated into the team quicker.
When you were having a conversation with Coach Bielma about this team, what are the things you have? I mean, you tweet all the time like, hey, thanks for this coach. Sat down with me for 50 minutes, went over his whole roster. What are the types of things you're trying to glean from those conversations to put into the magazine?
Yeah, I have a very specific conversation with the coaches. I send them my team pages, which have every player on them, all my notes on every player at every position, all their stats, everything that I have on the players. And I go to the coach, coach, there's my sheets. What I want you to do is put me in order and tell me something about the guys that are going to see the field this year. And then we go player by player, player by player. So there's not a lot of general conversation, maybe a little bit at the start where I talked to them about last year, maybe a game I wanted to go over with them. But for the most part, we're just grueling through each player on the team and each position. Get to the end of the position, I like to ask the coach how he feels about it overall. They let me know. And it's usually a really good conversation. But they do take a while because there's a lot of players in college football, 105 players on the team.
Yeah, and that's a big change, right? Like, it seems like so many teams are using those extra 20 scholarships to maybe take a few more chances in the spring with a kid who had a great senior year, or maybe there's a couple JUCOs that are a year early and that type of thing. I'm sure in those conversations you heard a decent amount of, you know, what these extra scholarships have meant to trying to build that depth.
Yeah, and the good thing is, the one thing I didn't hear this year was like last year when I went over a team like with Oklahoma State or West Virginia with Rich Rod, and they were bringing in 35 players after spring practice was over, and they would say, you know what, Phil? I don't know. I haven't seen him yet. We just signed him. I could tell you what I think he is, but I can't really tell you for sure. That's gone. All those conversations are gone because everybody was in for the spring, and they could tell me about him.
Phil Steele's joining us from Phil Steele's world headquarters at locations unknown, but writes Phil Steele's College Football 26 preview. You can get it at Barnes & Noble. You can order it online. Okay, this week was SEC Media Days. Next week, Big Ten Media Days, where we will be at. And that means it is time for the annual Who's Better, SEC or Big Ten. And, you know, obviously the Big Ten has bragging rights with three in a row in a national championship, but the old thought is, well, the average of the SEC is probably better, or at least the middle of the pack or bottom of the pack, whatever, is probably better than the middle or the bottom of the Big Ten. Care to opine on this annual exercise we go through?
Yeah, I think when you look at the Big Ten, you look at the strength at the top, and I think the NIL money that the Big Ten has has helped them build some super teams at the very top. You're looking at, you know, Ohio State, Oregon, Indiana, all three teams, clearly legitimate national title contenders. Teams like USC, Michigan are just right there knocking on the door. And so I think the strength at the top for the Big Ten, getting those 10, 11 win, 12 to win teams is easier than the SEC. But like you said, Scott, I feel the SEC is the deeper conference when you get down to teams number 15 and 16. Generally, I'm siding with the SEC team at that point. So, you know, I rate them both number one. I really had a tough time. If I could pick one number one heading into the year, I would. But my power ratings, basically, I add up all my nine sets of power ratings, divide them and multiply them number wise, and I come up within like a point or two of each other. Generally, like between the Big Ten and the SEC, followed by the ACC and Big 12, it's like a 30-40 point difference. But between the SEC and the Big Ten, it's like 0.5 is the difference. So I just tied them at the top.
Do the coaches you talk to in any conference, and I ask for specifically, do you talk to them and you go through this, and do they say, you're going to, you know what, Phil, you're going to put us at the bottom of the conference, and that's just about right. We're not expecting, will they ever just, or somebody will say, yeah, we're going to be middle of the pack, or, you know, just, you know, the teams, you know, how do they look at the season ahead compared to what you might, and even though if they wouldn't say it necessarily on the record?
Yeah, and that's the good thing about the conversations is all the calls are off the record, and the coaches know I'm not looking for clicks. I'm not going to get off the conversation and hop online and say, "Ooh, look at this juicy stuff I have just compiled." No, it all stays with me. I think the most refreshing conversation I had was with Scott Loeffler when he took over Bowling Green in 2019. He said, "Okay, Phil, here's the story. This first year, we're going to suck. The second year, we're going to suck less. The third year, we're going to be decent. The fourth year, we're going to be a little above decent. And the fifth year, we're going to get to a bowl game." But they told me I have 5 years, so I got 5 years to get to a bowl game. And guess what? That's exactly what happened with Bowling Green. So it's refreshing when coaches are like that.
So if I don't use the predictive measures and go through the power rankings, but in my brain, I go, Illinois has a new defensive coordinator, a new scheme. Basically, as you highlighted, a new defensive line and offensive line, and there's a new quarterback. Gee, that adds up to probably a team that's going to be more, you know, around 500 plus or minus a game or two. So, you know, how does that compare with, you know, can you get to the same place, but you're using a lot more numbers? You know, or do you kind of put that aside and just go with the numbers?
Yeah, I have a my main, I call it projected win-loss, and it's got everybody's schedule in there. And I take my nine sets of power ratings, play them into the schedule, factors in the home field edge, and then it spits out numbers at me. And sometimes, you know, it'll be anywhere from, hey, this team could, one set of power rings has 3-9 and one set of power rings has 10-2. And then you have to be like, whoa, where's the difference? And then the majority of the time, hey, it's 10-10, 9-10, 10, you know, that type of thing. When I look at Illinois, coming out of that, they were around a 7-8 win team. And then what I do after I write the magazine, I go through each game for the upcoming season and put who I'd have a favorite, who I have a dog. I factor in the look at the nine sets of power ratings, but I also look at situation, travel, series history, matchups, all that put into place. And after doing that, I've got Illinois favorite over UAB, Duke, Southern Illinois, Purdue, Michigan State on the road, Nebraska, and then two toss-up games on the road at Maryland and at Northwestern. I've got those both as toss-up games this year. I do have a slight underdog at UCLA and a slight underdog home against Iowa, and then, of course, underdog against Oregon and Ohio State. Now, those games that are anywhere from +3 to -3, there are six of them on the schedule. So a lot's going to depend on what happens in those close games. I could easily say, you know, let's say Illinois wins five of those six games, and you're looking at a, which you talked about at the start, maybe a 9-win team once again. And if they split them, go 3-3 on those games, then you're probably looking at a 7-5 season. But I clearly see a bowl game for Illinois, and you know, Brett Bielema's doing a hell of a job there.
Since you see a lot of this and you have these conversations, you're assembling this, I'm assuming that in the last few years with 18 teams in the Big Ten, you've seen the most schedule discrepancy. I mean, as you just mentioned with Illinois, you get Ohio State and Oregon, who might be the two top teams in the conference, but then you also get, you know, Maryland, Northwestern, Purdue, UCLA struggled last year, Michigan State struggled last year. You know, you're playing kind of both ends of it. How much do you dig into that when you're predicting the teams of like, hey, these schedules are wildly different now.
Huge. Huge. Let's talk about Wisconsin. You know, last year, Wisconsin took on the nation's toughest schedule, and there just was not a break anywhere along the line. This year, there's no Ohio State on the schedule. There's no Oregon on the schedule. There's no Indiana on the schedule. No Washington on the schedule. So their schedule got a lot easier. Penn State avoids the three big boys as well. And it's part of the reason I think Matt Campbell steps in and has a very solid first year, because he avoids all the big boys. You know, when I say the big boys, I'm talking about Ohio State, Oregon, Indiana, the three teams that are going to be preseason top 10, and does play some of the lighter teams like Purdue and Rutgers. Wisconsin plays Rutgers, Michigan State, and Purdue. And on the website, I have I break down all the schedules. If you look at my daily blogs, you can go back and look at the Big Ten schedules. I put the teams in red, burgundy, blue, and green. Wisconsin plays three green teams and zero red teams. So that's a real positive schedule for them. It's huge in process. And to give you an example, coming out of the SEC, Texas and Oklahoma, you know, both teams come in from the Big 12 to the SEC. Texas was playing one of the easiest schedules in the SEC. Oklahoma is playing one of the hardest. Look, Texas was up there with double-digit wins. Oklahoma was battling around 500 for the first couple of years. There really is a discrepancy in the schedules.
And I guess my other question on that, since you've mentioned Indiana, is my sense is it's kind of broken college football that now every fan base thinks, well, we'll just hire the right coach. He'll find 10 NFL players in the portal in his first year, and we're going to win a national title. In all your conversations with other teams, how has that effect changed the way, you know, people are approaching this?
Yeah, I tell you what, it definitely affects coaches, because now every fan base wants that national title. Hey, Cignetti did it with Indiana. We can do it here. That's rare. It's just going to be something that's extremely rare. I don't think you get there right away, and especially to have that much portal transition. He was fortunate bringing over players from his own team. And, of course, Kurt Cignetti's a hell of a coach. There's only one coach that's managed to overcome the bye week in the playoff, and that's Cignetti with his win last year. Everybody else has really struggled with the bye week. Even Kirby Smart lost to Ole Miss last year. So I think it puts pressure on any new coach to perform right away. And you see shorter leases. We're seeing coaches get let go after 2 years now, you know, middle of the third season. Overall, it amps it up, because fan bases are now have unrealistic expectations.
Any thoughts on the impact of a new scheme defensively, how that impacts teams historically?
Well, I think most teams, when you look at them defensively, are multiple. You know, you're going to come in, you're going to play three-man front, you're going to play four-man front, you're going to blitz, you're going to drop back. You got to be different on defense, almost on a play-to-play basis, just to keep the offenses guessing. Because if you play the same defense the entire game, they're going to take advantage of it. But, you know, and have you ever hired a defensive coordinator? Have you ever heard a defense coordinator conversation when you hire him that doesn't say, we're going to be more attacking and aggressive? Every coach says aggressive and attacking. You never hear one come in and say, you know what, we're going to play a little bit safer, and we're going to play a little more zone defense, and we're going to make the opponent beat us. No, nobody says that. So I'm asking you two, you've been around football a long time, has a new defense coordinator ever not said we're going to be attacking and aggressive?
They say it at about the same rate as basketball coaches say they want to get out and run this year, and baseball coaches say we might use small ball a little bit more this year.
Yes. Yeah. We'll be better defensively. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Phil Steele, any other thoughts there on Illinois or the Big Ten?
Yeah, Big Ten, I think you're looking at the big three, you know, Ohio State. Indiana's not going to drop off at all. I don't have an underdog in any game. I got the Ohio State game at home, a toss-up. And Oregon could very well be the fourth Big Ten team in 4 years to bring home a title, fourth different Big Ten team, I should say, in 4 years, which would be highly unusual. I don't think that's ever happened in college football. But if you're looking for a team to watch from the pack that's not being mentioned up there, watch USC this year. When I talked to Lincoln Riley, he said it's the best defense he's had in his 5 years. He hired Gary Patterson as the defense coordinator and has a lot of talent on that side of the ball. They have my number five rated offensive line. Jaden Maiava's back at quarterback. Their running backs were banged up last year, but King Miller, a walk-on, stepped in, nearly had 1,000 yards. They got Wayman Jordan, King Miller, a couple of VHT true frosh coming in. And then you look at their schedule. they host Oregon and they host Ohio State. And they were 7-0 at home last year. Remember when they traveled to Autzen Stadium at the end of last year? Had they beaten Oregon in Autzen Stadium and they gave them a good game, they would have made the playoff over Oregon last year. So they were close to being a playoff team. They could be the sneaky team in the Big Ten that gets into a playoff.
You know, Phil, the team that maybe kept them out of the playoff last year was this University yes. of Illinois.
How about that field goal?
Hitting a field yeah. goal at the wire. Maybe USC shouldn't have scored with 2 minutes left and left Luke.
That was a hell of a field goal, too. How long was yes. that again?
It was 41, 30, 39, something like yeah. that. But, yeah, it was about a perfect Saturday in Champaign, sunny and – you know, sold out crowd and everything, and been waiting a long time for that around here.
All right. You have two options. You can enjoy the college football season and watch the drama unfold, or you can skip to the end and read Phil Steele's college football preview.
You can spoil the whole season for yourself. Yeah. That's right.
The accuracy numbers speak for themselves. And Phil, we really appreciate you joining us on Light the Eye. We'd love to do it again.
Hey, sounds good. I love talking Illini football, that's for sure. And like I said, big Brett Bielema fan. So anytime I get to talk Illini football, I love it.
All right, thanks, Phil. We appreciate it.
Biggest takeaway from Phil Steele? Indiana's a big boy.
That's all I was going to say.
He said that a couple of times.
I even hate myself for asking the Indiana question. I mean, it is the question in college football for 2026. It's like, has this unicorn broken college football? But still, I hate asking it.
Yeah. No, he's good. He's really good. And his magazine is good. What I like about it is it kind of fits you. Too. I just mean, it's kind of like he's not worried about the flashy. Mm-hmm. Like, I think you could. Here's the Utah Utes, and you could like yes. turn this into 7 pages with more images and mm-hmm. you know, a font that's readable for mm-hmm. somebody bigger than an ant. But like, this is just mm-hmm. information, mm-hmm. good information that you can use however you like.
And he, I mean, I just seeing one of the subheads is special teams, like. He has dug into what are the Utah Utes special teams going to be like this year. Like, that's what that magazine is. Every part of every team evaluated and put into the magazine.
And on the cover, so you know that, you know, there's 5 Big Ten teams represented right there on the cover, Robert.
Isn't that Arizona State in the middle?
That would be Minnesota.
That is Minnesota?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they got a... They have a gold and maroon color scheme, in case you didn't know. Okay.
Recognize the helmet.
Media days. Next time we're together, we're going to be in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And it'll be Big Ten Media Days. We are planning to talk to Brett Bielema and the three players, Juice Clark, Matthew Bailey, and Caton Hauser. I will say this. The fact that Caton Hauser is coming to Media Days. That didn't happen for Luke Altmaier in his first year. Now, Caton Hauser's older. Mm-hmm. It's his third school. But Bielema is willing to put his quarterback out there right away and, like, here's the mantle. Take it. Embrace it. He's, in the past, would you agree, a little more protective?
Here are the leaders from last season, and here's who we're going to bring to there, and don't want to overwhelm the new guy with, hey, he's declared the starter already. I mean, it feels like those days are like QB competitions. What are there, 5 in college football this year? You know, it's this, we've reached this whole, like, well, now after the portal season, we know who's starting at every school. It's just totally, totally different now.
Yeah. But still, to walk into a new school and say, okay, you're the guy at quarterback, mm-hmm. and you know, I'm putting you out there in media day and everything. That's a little different.
It is.
That didn't happen with, Tommy DeVito. That didn't happen with, help me out. Was he the last one before, why am I?
Before Altmaier? Yeah. I mean, it was Brandon Peters before him.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, he wasn't his first year. I think yeah. his second year he went to Chicago or wherever media days were.
So, looking forward to it. We're going to take the show on the road.
That's right.
For only the second time. The other time was?
The bowl game.
Yeah.
But we also We did the one episode, the snow day, when the
that's true. We were
when
at
the
Logic
armory was closed. We had to go to Logic and sit in the conference room and
yeah.
and record from there. With
but this is like
10
a true
snow on the ground
on the road trip, and yes. it'll look a little more professional than the kitchen of your Airbnb
with that one cabinet that was open that bothered everyone in the background. It was my son's fault. He got a coffee cup out of there and didn't shut it. Throw him under the bus.
All right. Thanks so much to Kendall Crawford, our producer. Thanks to our hosts here in the Center for Innovation in Teaching and Learning.
Actually, one second. One Ooh, second.
Kendall's got something.
I got a surprise here.
Oh, boy.
For Robert.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
I wanted to save this for the outro, okay?
Okay.
I'm going to give it over to you, Robert.
Okay.
Give me one sec.
He's coming over here.
Got a special guest.
What's
oh?
Got a special guest. I wanted to get this on camera because it's very important.
So go ahead, Robert. Open that up.
Okay.
I have no idea.
This is exciting.
All right, well, Robert, what you got there?
Put it on the camera.
Let's put it on the camera. That's right. We have my face plant, which I did put
you know
out
what?
On Twitter.
I don't know if we can. Can you put this here? May I? Can you put it on me?
See, oh, that's a good point. Yes,
we have this in the background that sometimes you catch, but I think.
What if we put it over my shoulder? Here, let me try.
I think we could just see instead of this picture. And I'm sorry for the folks that are listening audio only. I'm holding up a framed piece of artwork with a collection of the best Illini basketball players in Illini history. But maybe we should just put this. You know what? Our audio listeners have no idea what we're talking about. Yes. This is a framed photo of Robert's flop into the sand.
Yes. My face plant where it is showing up on my face. All right. I'm going to go. Let's see. How about right in front of the pillow? Let's try this.
I think you could go right on the table or here between us. But an image that will live.
There we go. I like that. I like that.
Perfect.
Thank you, Kendall, for my... my present. Thank you for filming, and thank you to everyone else
You're
for
coughing,
reaching out.
You still have sand in your
no
lungs.
No kidding. No kidding. Yes.
That's
I
great.
Had sand. There's still sand in the car. There's still sand. You know, the best comment, I put that photo on Twitter. Somebody commented, "For we know you have sand." That's perfect. Just perfect.
All right. For Kendall Crawford... For thanks to our guest Bill Steele, for our hosts here at the Center for Innovation in Teaching and Learning, for our lead sponsor, the U of I Credit Union, and for Robert Rosenthal, I'm Scott Beatty. We'll talk to you after Big Ten Media Day the next time we light the eye.